Well, it's a poignant Sunday for me because next week Father David will be here, and then Deacon Mark, whom I bet you have not, unless he's here out there somewhere, will be here, and I won't be reading the gospel, proclaiming the gospel until Christmas, which is always tough for a pastor to give up. But so we're going to be blessed with deacons, old and new, literally. So the next one that's coming is half the age of the one that went. So, but I hope you'll all welcome Father David when he comes next week, because he's coming back from Utah to share the gift of his priesthood. This gospel is really interesting. I have to do part of this out here. I got my hands moving. I'm half Italian. If you go to Israel today, I know a lot of you have never had the chance to go there. I was fortunate enough to go right after I was ordained a priest with this, with the abbey up there has one every 2 years. It was a wonderful trip. And there's two Caesareas, and it's confusing if you don't know the geography. One is Caesarea by the sea, and one is Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea by the sea was used for centuries after Israel fell to the Romans. It was an artificial harbor, the first one in the world, and made of concrete, Roman concrete and stones, and it was there for many centuries until it fell into ruin with an earthquake. It's still right under the water there, and there's a big amphitheater, and it was a wonderful and very important port because Israel doesn't have a natural harbor even today. They made an artificial one, but there's no natural one. But the one that Jesus and the disciples are at, another Caesarea, this one is up in northern Galilee. It's kind of interesting. I was noticing the last 3 weeks we've mentioned this. Jesus is going from one pagan place to the other. You notice that? So now he's in a place. Caesarea Philippi is not a Jewish city. It was in the Old Testament times, it would have been a city of paganism. That was one of the centers of the native cult of Baal, B-A-A-L. And when the Jews threw that out, the Romans came in. Remember, Israel had been an occupied nation for centuries at this point. The Romans put up gods for their people who were occupying Israel, and one of the centers was Caesarea Philippi. Caesar was originally one of the emperors, but later that title was applied to all of them, and it meant the God of gods. So there they are, going to this place with all these false gods and shrines in the nation of Israel. And Jesus, there, you can imagine them walking along there and looking at these gods. And you know what, I don't know what Jesus was thinking about it, but it represents fallen humanity and people's attempt to find the divinity without having any knowledge of God, which is kind of where we're going back today. People that reject the truth of God, they find him in falsities and things that aren't real or don't satisfy, you know. So it's kind of like walking down the mall in a way. You're seeing all these things. You can see the ruins today, walk down the street without seeing the buildings, but you get the idea. It's a really poignant place to ask this question. And so you can see where this question comes up. You know, they're kind of saying, look at what these people believe. Here's Pan, and here's, you know, Hermes, and here's Apollo, and here's, they actually believe the emperor is a god. And Jesus is kind of smiling and walking. And in another gospel, they're kind of warming themselves by the fire. Maybe it was after they walked there that Jesus, they get to talking about this. And Jesus says, you know, who do people say that I am? Those are false gods. Who do they think I am? And, you know, the disciples don't know yet who he is. It's Mark 8. Not all of them do. But Peter's the one that knows. He's given the grace to actually understand who this man, and he was a man. He didn't look any different than anyone else. And he says, you are the Christ. And if you look at the other gospels, the Son of the living God. This is an amazing thing to say at this point. And the transfiguration hadn't occurred. They'd seen miracles. So at this point, Peter figures it out. But the question that Christ asks us today, I think, is who do you say that I am? And again, I found myself, we're praying about this, discussing with another priest this afternoon, and sometimes we talk out what we think we're going to talk about. And both of us had been present at Caesarea Philippi many years ago now. I'd like to go back someday. And it's kind of like going down the mall, the Salem Center, or Lancaster Mall or someplace. And what would Jesus say as he's walking along? People don't worship false gods today, but we all have a technology. So for some people, that's a false god. You know, last year, I was thinking, we were in Amsterdam right about this time, and the iPhone 6 came out, remember? And we landed in Amsterdam, and right across the street from the hotel was this line that went all the way around the building. It was people getting the iPhone 6 a month after the U.S. did. What are they doing now? There's a new one coming out. Are they trading that thing in for another one? I mean, I've got an iPhone 6, so I'm not saying it's a false god. I'm saying that it doesn't satisfy. Now there's another one. Now it's a used thing. There's some new thing. Now you can push it. There's always some new little gizmo to get us to buy another one. You can't find eternal happiness at the mall. You know, this is obvious. But we try. This is where a lot of people worship on Sunday, so to speak, or whatever. You know, we try to find God in places where he doesn't exist. This is what they were doing in Roman times. You know, they did the best they could. They didn't know the truth. And people are yearning. We can't live without God, so therefore we have to find some substitute for him. Sometimes it's substances or things that we do that don't last or that hurt us in the end or hurt others. So Jesus is walking along with us. How do we know who we say Jesus is? It's an interesting thing, but it will come up in our daily lives. Sometimes we will, in our sin, we might deny him, and then we'll go to confession, or we will repent of this, and we will turn around. And Peter himself says the wrong thing one paragraph later. Like any of us, if one of you says to me, and it's happened many times here at St. Ed's, I have a terminal illness, and somebody says this, I say, God, may it not happen to you. It's a natural reaction, isn't it? And Peter says, he hears Jesus say, I'm going to die, and the religious authorities are going to put me to death, and he says, dear God, don't let this happen to you. And he gets rebuked. He says, you're thinking like a human being. This is God's will, and I have to go through it. How many times do we say to God, you know, I really hate this thing, but I will be done? This is what Jesus did at the cross. He said, I don't want this. You can do anything. You can get me out of this. This is Gethsemane, I'm paraphrasing. But he says, at the end he said, your will be done. And his will was the cross, you know. So it doesn't mean God's abandoned us if we end up on a cross. This is why Christ is warning us. We're on earth. We're not in heaven. There's something I have to go through with someone. I was thinking about, something came to mind in my airline days when I worked in an office that was not at the airport for most of my career, but was in the Fairfax district of LA, which was about a block from Beverly Hills. They called it Beverly Hills adjacent. And so we were in that area. And after they moved my office to Arizona, they offered me a paid move and everything. And those of us who stayed behind, there was the month of July of 1991. That last month, all the people that were staying and leaving for various reasons were all in the office, the old office that was closing. And everybody else had gone to Tucson except for a couple of supervisors. And some of them were also retiring, or severing, as we called it. It was very interesting to watch what people did. Have you ever been in a company that's quitting? Hagen is quitting. Some of these people are being laid off. What do you do when you've got 2 weeks left to work? And they can't do anything to you. You got your final paycheck coming. You know, you don't have to work hard. They can't fire you. What are you going to do? This is how you know who you are. What are you going to do when you have the power? And I watched people I worked with whom I respected who did nothing but screw off for those 2 weeks. I still remember that. I'm not going to tell you what I did. No, I worked hard. I just can't do that. But you know, a lot of people did. They took long lunch breaks. They went grazing, as we called it then, you know. And one lady would come in. She'd sign in, and she'd put her makeup on, and she'd sit there and have lunch and chit-chat. And I just watched that, and I said, she's telling God who she thinks he is, not there. I don't work for you, Lord. These people fired me or whatever. They moved. They didn't offer me a job here in L.A., and I don't care. And that's the way it is. But, you know, this is how we know who God is for us, is how we act during the day. I had an experience a couple of days ago in which
I got a new credit card. I got a airline mileage card. I've been using one card, and it turned out I don't get any miles, air miles for it, so I switched over. And I was trying to switch over my donation here for St. Ed's, because I want, it sounds two-faced, but I want my air miles for that donation. And so I was trying to switch the credit card, and it just wouldn't let me do it. And I finally said to God, well, if you don't want my money, I'm tired of you fighting me, Lord. It wasn't God's fault. It was the computer. And I had this slideshow going on my TV. I do this while I'm reading. I have a big flat screen, but I use put slides up. I've been everywhere, and I like to put one up a minute and guess where it is. So this is what I do in the evenings. Sounds like fun. I need to get a life, don't I? And So I was telling the Lord what I thought of him, and in the sense of not accepting my online contribution, and a big picture of the Sacred Heart came up, and I said, "Oh, that's who you are." I caught myself telling him who he wasn't, you know. And we find ourselves like this. You're caught how we drive. Because I'm from LA, I have a whole theology of driving, and I really do believe that when we have anonymity and power, or we're laid off and we feel that we've been grieved, how we treat people whom we're never going to see again, who are nothing, who are servants of ours or employees of ours or bosses of ours we're never going to see again, this is how we know how we love Jesus. And there again, if Jesus were to walk with us through the mall of our lives, would he find that we have worshiped false gods in a certain sense? I think it's not an accident that Jesus is walking through Caesarea Philippi. That's why it's important to know what that place is. Mark makes a point of telling us where he is. This is a non-Jewish place. It's a bit scandalous in the sense that it's not a place Jews would go for vacation. But Jesus is trying to get away from the crowds again. And he's also teaching the disciples a lesson. I'm not a false god. But I'm not going to promise you something that's false. I'm going to promise you the cross. If you follow me, you're going to get a cross. It's not going to be one you choose. It's going to be one I choose. And the voluntary ones that we accept prepare us for the one that comes out of the blue that we are not expecting. And this is Christ. He'll get us out of a lot of them, but occasionally one will come and we have to accept it. If we don't, we don't really love him. I keep going back to those marriage vows. I've done so many weddings, good times and bad times, sickness and health, richer and poorer. I will love you and honor you all the days of my life. Doesn't that apply to Christ? Doesn't that apply to our relationship with the Lord? Isn't that why he calls marriage is the sacrament that most relates to heaven? We're going to have an equal share of both on our plate. And so Peter is saying, God forbid anything bad should happen to you, Lord. But he said, love is what you go through with somebody, and there's something I have to go through for love of you. And if I don't go through this, you won't get into heaven. I have to pay the price that I'm going to get you out of. So they didn't understand this yet. And we often don't understand God's will either. But it comes down to little things. Most of us won't have too many opportunities to be laid off, or like I did, or I wasn't laid off. I voluntarily quit. There are times in our lives when God seems a bit distant or things don't go our way. But these are the times when the Lord asks us, now who do you say that I am? Are you with me in the sickness, the bad times, and the poor times of your life? Are you willing to be with me all the days of your life and not just the good times? Are you willing to come to me when I don't come to you right away? It's the same as any relationship, isn't it? So this gospel really is all about us, and it's a marvelous example of how Jesus walks with us on the journey of life. It's a discussion most of us have had with Christ many times. The last day of our life, that's really what Christ is going to say. He's going to show us our life and say, who did you say that I was? And our life will speak for itself. And this is why he tells us now in advance, who do you say that I am?